Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. This is officially our very first episode because the introduction was episode zero. So today we are going to talk about dyslexia. It is going to be all about dyslexia. We're going to talk about it today like we would talk about it with the parents and adults that call in to get more information. We're not going to use any textbook definitions, or we're not going to give you what you could read on the internet. We're just going to explain it to you like we would explain it to any one of our clients. We both feel like that's probably the best way to approach these, all of the disabilities we're going to talk about, because we want it to be as understandable and relatable as possible. So, Abby, when someone calls in and wants to know about dyslexia, what do you tell them? What is it?
Well, I tell them it depends on the age of the person that is a struggling reader. Typically, people are calling in saying, my child is struggling to learn to read. In the young ages, you know, pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, they're oftentimes still struggling to remember their letters and their letter sounds, or associate the sounds that go with the letters. They're struggling to blend sounds together and read words more fluently. They're struggling with spelling. They're struggling remembering what they read. Oftentimes they're just memorizing sight words, but they can't attack a new unfamiliar word. They can't do what's called decode and use those phonic strategies to apply it to a new word. I'll tell them they're typically students or people with average to above average intelligence, and the dyslexia is the reading difficulty is unexpected in relation to their other abilities.
They're progressing everywhere else. It's just the reading.
That's right. They're progressing in all other areas. They're probably, you know, average in math, and they're doing okay in science except for the reading portions, but they're struggling with reading. And it oftentimes in some later grades, second and beyond, it carries over into difficulties with writing, and it's affecting spelling abilities, word finding abilities. Sometimes these individuals struggle with thinking of the right word to say, or they have limited vocabulary. They just can't pull out that word they're thinking of, or they don't have the ability to use their context clues to choose appropriate vocabulary words that would, you know, make sense in what they're thinking or what they're reading or what they're saying.
Well, and when you talk about spelling, I feel like we have a lot of people that will say, oh, well, you know, he gets 100 on every spelling test. But my question is always, right, but then can he spell that same word the next week?
That's right.
You know, because they've memorized, and that's what they do, is they memorize. They have amazing memories, and they've learned to compensate. They've learned how to kind of hide it by memorizing. Oftentimes, when you're reading the same book over and over again all week, they've memorized it. If you pull out a new book, those same words, they don't have any idea what they are in the other context, because they're not in the words aren't in the same order.
That's right.
But the spelling is the one that like they can memorize it. They can drill and practice those words for the whole week, take their spelling test, make a 100. And then when they go to write it in a sentence, they can't spell that word.
Or they can read a word in one instance and then they can't read it again, you know, 30 seconds later, halfway down the page. So they've just memorized it, or they guessed based on the first letter they saw, which can be a good strategy for reading when you're trying
but
to.
But it sure can frustrate parents.
It is very frustrating.
Because then they just are guessing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably how we typically tell them, is that at its root, it's an inability to assign the sounds to the letters and understand how those sounds and letters come together to make words.
That's right.
It's a phonological. Now, something that we get questions about too is, aren't there lots of different types of dyslexia? So we're going to really focus today on what we call phonological dyslexia. That's the most common type. That's what the schools will typically test for. That's what the different programs typically address. So we're just going to focus on the phonological type. Maybe at a later episode, we can dive into what those other ones are. So how do you diagnose it?
Well, that's a good question, Lori. Diagnosing dyslexia really needs to start with a comprehensive evaluation. You want to look at all of an individual's abilities, not just focus in on reading skills. You want to see what is going on with their processing skills, how they're processing information and making sense of information, synthesizing information. And you want to test all academic areas as well to try to get to the root of the difficulties, to see what their other abilities are. You want to be able to prove that this is an unexpected underachievement in the area of reading. So really a comprehensive evaluation from start to finish that looks at cognitive processes and academic processes of learning.
You want to rule out that it's not an attention issue, right?
That's right.
And you want to rule out that this isn't an auditory processing issue.
Or vision problem.
Or a visual processing issue. So auditory processing means maybe they're just not hearing the sounds correctly. And I certainly can't teach somebody the sounds that make up a word if they can't even hear them. So we've got to go back and address that issue first before I try to teach them how to read. Same with vision. It may not be, and we'll get into this, you know, again later, but it may not be that the words might be moving around on the page, or there might be something going on with how they process what they see. They may have 20/20 vision. They may not. We want to look at all of those things too, to make sure that we're not sending them down a path that's not going to be helpful. Putting them in a program that reteaches reading, if they're not seeing or hearing the stuff correctly, it's going to be extremely frustrating. And they're going to get to the end of a program and waste a lot of time and have made zero progress or very little progress. And so the full evaluation then helps us rule out auditory processing, visual processing, attention and focus, or another type of learning disability. So you're exactly right. It has to be, we have to really look at all of those things to show that, nope, it's just this compared to everything else. Everything else looks great, but it's just this. And this is at the phonics level, you know, mm-hmm. they're struggling. Now, what you and I talk about a lot too with some of the older kids is that it's amazing the strategies that kids can develop to hide or to
compensate.
And so those strategies may work all the way through elementary school, and you may get to middle school and then the work gets too hard and their strategies aren't working. And that's when you start to see the struggles. It's like, well, you've never seen this before until now. Mm-hmm. It may be that they get even further. I actually had our oldest student that I've diagnosed was a junior in college. And, you know, mom had always suspected there might be some reading struggles, but she always blew all the testing out of the water. She did great all the way through. She got to her junior year, which is where they started. She started taking those courses in her major. So brand new vocabulary, brand new, a lot of reading. And all of a sudden, these are all these words that she's never seen before. She doesn't recognize them, words that she had memorized. Whatever strategy she was using, they just stopped working. And it was such a relief to her to find out that, okay, this is something, mm-hmm. you know, it's not that I'm just not good at this.
Right. There's a word that goes with what I'm experiencing.
And she was able to go on. I found out from her mom later on that she was able to go on and graduate. I believe she was in accounting, but she went in and got her master's degree. Wow. You know? And so it's crazy to me that you can go that long, but she was able to do it. So, right. You know, if you have a student or if you are an adult and you've always thought reading is hard, you've always struggled with reading, your spelling is terrible, it's not unbelievable for it to be dyslexia and have it go undiagnosed. And right. So that is very common.
It's not too late to diagnose it.
No, never. And it does look a little bit different at every age because of those compensatory skills, those strategies that kids develop, that it tends to hide it. Do we know what causes dyslexia?
Well, we do know that there is a huge hereditary component. So it is, you know, hereditary within families. And typically, if you search through your family's history, there is someone else that has had dyslexia diagnosed or undiagnosed or reading difficulties. It also can happen from premature births, can cause low birth weight and make those individuals more predisposed to different learning disabilities or trauma at birth. But really, there aren't known causes. There are different aspects of the brains of dyslexic when they get brain scans, different areas of the brain that are affected. But there is really no known cause besides the fact that we know it has a huge hereditary component.
Yeah, I've had lots of parents say, I just don't think that we have any, but then they could do some research and like, you know, my grandmother said that she struggled with reading or right. It's just, but nope, you know, you go back far enough and nobody was being diagnosed at that time. So mm-hmm. That's pretty typical. I think one thing I really want to talk about is what dyslexia is not.
That's right.
what it is not. So one thing that we get tons of phone calls about is letter reversals, B and D reversals, P and Q reversals, number reversals, transposing numbers, transposing letters.
Reading backwards.
And I really would love backwards. To find the person that started that rumor. I don't know who they are, but they have got everybody believing that writing backwards, and we'll even joke about it if we write something wrong, like, oh, there's my dyslexia, which It really is nothing about dyslexia. Letter reversals are totally appropriate developmentally through the end of second grade. I have a child who has a later birthday, and he was doing them into third grade a little bit. But I knew because of his May birthday, we might go a little bit over that second grade mark. But they're totally normal. And so if you've got a child, or you see you're a teacher and you've got kids in your class that are reversing letters all the way through second grade, totally normal. After second grade, if it continues, then we're talking more about a visual processing issue, right? How their brain is interpreting what their eyes are seeing. But it is not, it really has nothing to do with dyslexia. Isn't that funny? Again, I really wish we could find the person that started that rumor, but what about testing students who are like in pre-K? Like, what if I think my 4-year-old has dyslexia?
Well, really, you want to make sure that we are looking at someone that has had what we call the educational opportunities. So they've had education or instruction in the foundational skills of reading. It is too early to diagnose dyslexia, in my opinion, on a pre-K student that hasn't had the exposure to phonics instruction, sight word instruction, the foundational reading skills, learning through that multisensory approach of all the different sounds of the letters and associating each letter with its sound and putting those sounds together. It's also developmentally at 4 years old and in pre-K, 4 and 5 also, they're developing at different rates. Each child is developing at their own rate, and some develop more slowly than others. And also their brains developmentally aren't ready to be reading at 4 years old. Mm-hmm. They're still learning through play and through tactile sensory input, and their brains are not fully ready to learn to read. That's why the curriculum is designed to start teaching letters and sounds of letters in kindergarten.
Well, and all of the tests that we use are standardized, meaning that they compare you against other people or other kids or whatever your same age. So 4-year-olds aren't expected to be reading yet.
That's
right. So when we test a 4-year-old, they're going to look pretty average.
Because it's not expected. Right. They're not going to score below average.
No, it's going to be really hard to be below average when nobody's reading yet.
That's right.
Our rule of thumb is always by the second semester of kindergarten, because I feel like that gives you a full semester of formal instruction in learning your letters. Now, if you have a summer birthday or are really young for kindergarten, that's a whole nother conversation too. If you're developmentally the right age for the second semester of kindergarten, I feel like then you've got a chance at showing that you're behind. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to be behind when nobody's learned anything yet.
That's right.
I think the schools have done a better job of starting to screen in first grade for a while. And I think there are still some schools that will say, we don't test until the end of second grade, which I think is way too late, because when you get to third grade, you're not learning how to read anymore. You're reading to learn. So you don't want to spend your entire third grade year learning how to read. Everyone else is moving on and reading to learn. So I really feel like anything you can do to have, so most dyslexia programs, which we hadn't really gotten into yet, are, at least that I'm familiar with, are usually around a 2-year program. It takes about 2 years, and they go back and they reteach phonics. And the way that I explain that to parents, because I am not a dyslexia therapist, but the way I explain it is that they teach phonics in a language that a dyslexic brain understands. Mm-hmm. The traditional curriculum, the way that phonics are taught traditionally in the schools, a person with dyslexia, it's like they're teaching it in German. Mm-hmm. They may as well be speaking a different language. So the dyslexia program goes back through and starts over with A, apple, A, but it does it in a way that teaches them in a language that they understand, that their brain understands. It's very multisensory. And that's the way dyslexic brain learns.
In addition to teaching them the way they learn best, they're also, because they struggle to learn the sounds and apply the phonics strategies and rules, they do teach them the underlying reading rules of the English language. They teach them different reading rules that associate with these vowel combinations or this letter or why this letter makes this certain sound. So it gives them some underlying reasoning behind certain sounds and how they're made and why they occur. So that's why oftentimes in many schools, they say, you know, a lot of struggling learners, they say that they may or may not do well in dyslexia programs because you want to be able to have a decent memory and be, you know, at least average intelligence to remember all the different strategies and rules you're taught through dyslexia therapy intervention programs. But it can be corrected and really remediated through dyslexia therapy intervention programs. Like Lori said, they're multisensory programs that are also taught in a very structured, very systematic way that, again, is geared towards the brain of an individual with dyslexia.
They fascinate me how they have, they really do, they work through it. It's such a methodical method, which is the same word twice, mm-hmm. but it's so important. And so when we talk to parents about getting support for their child, to me, for dyslexia, if your public school or your private school offers a dyslexia program, that should replace their regular reading instruction, because going to reading, again, is like going to French. Like, they don't understand it. So if they can get that instruction to replace that time, that would be the best. But the best part about it is that when they're done with that program, they have all the same tools that I have to decode a word. They've just learned them. They've acquired them a different way.
That's right.
And so it's pretty cool. So the sooner you do it, I've noticed the sooner these kids get those interventions, the less the struggles are later on. You know, if we've got a kiddo that's coming in here for testing so that, you know, they need updated testing for whatever reason, and they're in 10th grade, and I know that they were diagnosed in first grade, they went through the dyslexia program, their struggles now are much less.
Mm-hmm.
than they would have been had they not done the program or done it much later.
Right.
So I feel like that diagnosing at an early age with dyslexia is so important, because you want to get that reteaching, the teaching in the method that they understand, completed, so they can then just keep moving on with their peers.
Right.
Now, will they ever love to read? I don't know, maybe not. Will they ever be great spellers? Doubtful. They may always struggle with spelling, mm-hmm. but we have technology for that now. But
spelling is typically the last skill to come for individuals with dyslexia.
And that's where we've got the most help. And
right.
That's what's most socially acceptable now, right?
Exactly.
To use spell check.
Spell check.
So the sooner you can get that help, the less it's going to impact you long term.
Right.
You know, now, does that mean that when we diagnose a 12th grader or a junior in college with dyslexia that they're a lost cause? No, because there are different ways then to address it at an older age. I'm not going to go back, or the dyslexia therapist isn't going to go back with a junior in college and teach them A, apple, A.
Right.
Fairly certain they've got that. But there are pieces of it that a trained dyslexia therapist can go in and figure out what is missing. Mm-hmm. Where are the gaps? And how do I plug those in and help them understand the language better so that they can move forward and spell and decode words
right
easier?
And also in those later grades, like you said, Lori, they are reading to learn. And so comprehension is key. If you're expending all your mental energy breaking down every single word you're confronted with, then by the end of that sentence or that passage or that page, you can't remember anything you've read and you have no comprehension.
And then you're frustrated.
So again, another reason in support of that early intervention, so that by the third grade, they are reading to learn, because reading comprehension and reading is in every single subject they're going to be in, and it's going to affect them in all subjects, all content.
Well, and I think, too, it's important to know that you don't have to be completely done with the dyslexia program by the time you start third grade, but if you can have a chunk of it under your belt, you know, some of the, you know, get through the first half of it,
mm-hmm.
or even the first quarter of it. I mean, anything you can get done prior to that point is, I think, just going to make life easier for you when it comes to all the reading that happens. It's not always possible, though. There's lots of reasons why kids have to wait and do these programs later on. Does it mean they're less effective? No.
No.
It just means they've had more years of struggle.
That's right. And there are different programs for older students versus younger students. So a dyslexia therapist is going to look at the age and experience of the individual also. So what they're teaching through dyslexia therapy interventions in middle school is very different sometimes of what they're teaching in the early elementary grades.
Exactly. It's definitely personalized for each student. But it is really, so one thing I think is important to say too is that it just doesn't mean that you have to do more practice in reading and going to a place like Sylvan or Kumon. Well, those are great for other needs and issues. Dyslexia, it's not, because just going back and reteaching somebody the phonics in the same way they learned it the first time is not going to help. And we've had that. We've had kids that have repeated grades. That's not going to help.
Right.
Because they didn't get the first time because their brain doesn't understand the way it's being taught. You have to use that specialized instruction. Mm-hmm. There are private therapists. There are some great centers that do like an Orton-Gillingham type language-based, you know, dyslexia therapy. And then there are individual dyslexia therapists that have been trained and are certified in the ways of dyslexia therapy and understanding.
That's right. It is a curriculum that there are different curriculums that have been developed based on a lot of research on individuals with dyslexia. So when we say dyslexia intervention or reading intervention, it is not just reteaching phonics. It is using one of those research-based curriculum programs that are available that are based on, typically they're based on what Lori mentioned, Orton-Gillingham method. They have been around a very long time and have done a ton of research on dyslexia and dyslexia interventions and programs and the dyslexic brains. So any type of reading program that is Orton-Gillingham based is going to be one of the most beneficial programs for individuals with dyslexia. Once you've diagnosed it, we're working on correcting it. But in the meantime, while we're working on correcting it, how can you accommodate individuals with dyslexia? How can you help them be successful day to day in the classroom setting or adults in the workplace?
Because it's not an overnight fix, right? Once you get diagnosed, then you've got to figure out a way to manage now while you work on that program to improve those skills. So, you know, typically we talk about classroom accommodations, which are just ways to kind of level the playing field for these kids. I think it's super important to have an opportunity to have stuff read to them, whether they're using audiobooks, whether they've got mom or dad reading homework. Adults, for sure, audiobooks. You can have the software on your computer that reads emails to you or that reads text on your computer. Any type of help in that to me is the very best thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because the reading is the hard part. Some of these kids or even adults are great at comprehending if you read it to me. But the once you make me read it, now I'm lost in the words and I can't tell you what it said.
Right.
So that's a big one. More time. They need more time to practice. So more time to finish assignments, more time to take tests, things like that. Because they are going to have to, if they are forced to read it themselves, they're going to have to read it more than once before they understand it. So giving them that time so they're not feeling that anxiety of, oh, great, everyone else is done and I'm only halfway. Those are big ones. Not counting off for spelling mistakes unless it's a final draft of something is one we always talk about too is, you know, they're going to make spelling mistakes. But if someone goes through and helps them correct it, then they're able to turn in a final draft or a final copy of something or just not counting off for spelling unless, you know, it's a spelling test. But in that same breath, spelling tests should be modified because they shouldn't be expected to memorize the same 20 words that everyone else is doing. They should have a modified list. And honestly, in a perfect world, that list should reflect the rules that are being covered in their dyslexia program, right? Because you got to practice
them. That's right.
It just makes sense.
And apply them.
Absolutely. So those to me are the big ones. What are some that you can
maybe
think of?
Maybe a teacher picking the most important words. Oftentimes learning sight words that you have to memorize are important spelling words when you look at modifying a spelling list. Extra time on assignments does come to mind, but also extra time to respond to questions asked oftentimes is helpful for individuals with dyslexia because they are processing information a little bit differently and they're processing language a little bit differently. And so extra time to respond, extra time to complete things.
This one should go without saying, but making sure that they're not picked to read out loud. Because it happens. And sometimes not on purpose of the teacher, they just forget. but making sure that there's some way for them to know that they are not to be asked to read out loud in front of the class, because that's mortifying for those kids. They already feel bad enough about themselves than to share it with the rest of the class.
Don't call on them unless they raise their hand and volunteer.
Exactly. Right. Because that then, you know, they've had time to process it. They found the answer they need, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Allowing them to use a place marker oftentimes will help also, because they need to follow along underneath the words that they're learning, they're practicing, they're, again, decoding each and every sound, usually in the beginning of their intervention program. So sometimes just covering up the rest of the words and the rest of the page and focusing in on that one line you're reading can help your brain focus in on those words and decode those words slowly and efficiently.
You know, one thing I forgot to mention too with the audiobooks, I find that the most important thing to do with the audiobooks is have them follow along. So not just have the audio version, but have the paper version that they can literally with their finger follow along. I think so many good things happen if you follow along while someone else is reading to you. Mm-hmm. So whether you have the audiobook or you have someone reading it to you, because you're seeing those sight words, right? Because there are, our language is a hot mess and there are words that you can't decode that don't follow any phonetic rules. If I tried to spell because phonetically, I'd get it wrong every time.
Right.
So there's those words you just have to memorize. So hearing them and seeing them over and over again as you follow along, but also I always feel like most of the audiobooks are read at a pretty average rate. So you're pacing yourself. Like if I want to run an 8-minute mile, Lord help me, I would find a group that runs 8-minute miles and I would run with them. And in the beginning, I would die. The goal would eventually be that I'd be running 8-minute miles. So if you're following along with somebody who's reading at an average rate, in the beginning, it's going to be a little harder. But eventually, you're going to keep up. And that's training your those muscles in your brain so that when the reader's gone, that's kind of the rate you should be reading at.
Right.
So
it's like having a good model.
Exactly. So I think the following along piece, like listening, when you can't follow along, sometimes there isn't the paper book available or you're driving and you can't follow along, and that's okay. It's great to listen. But when you can follow along, a lot of good things can happen if you follow along.
Yeah. And that does go back to also that approach for the dyslexic brain. It's multisensory. So they learn best and they remember best through a multisensory approach. So the more senses that are involved in learning, the more it's going to help them understand and remember the skill or concept. So seeing it, hearing it, touching it, all of those are inputting all the...
They're
hitting all the senses.
Well, and if you can say it, so if you read out loud to your, once these kids get more fluent with their reading and are recognizing more words, if they can read out loud to themselves, then they're seeing it, saying it, hearing it, potentially touching it. Like you've,
that's right.
You're more likely to remember what it is that you're reading if you have all that going on while you're doing it. So, mm-hmm. I think this is the time when I really want to talk about too, about advocating, because kids already feel bad about themselves. They don't want to remind the teacher, oh, don't forget, I get to take my test in the other room where I have more time or where someone goes and reads it to me. So it's super important for kids to understand dyslexia and know that it doesn't mean that they're not smart and it doesn't mean that they aren't capable. It's just that their brain learns differently. And so they're going to be taught in a way their brain understands. And until then, we're going to need to do some things a little bit different. Right. And it's okay. And they need to be okay with that. And they need to be learn how to advocate for themselves.
You know, it is something we get asked, or I've noticed we get asked a lot, is that once we've made a diagnosis, parents will often ask, should I tell my child?
Yeah.
Or how do I explain it to my teenager? And so it is important for an individual to understand their own difficulties and understand the challenges that they experience, and putting a word to it sometimes,
giving it a name,
that's right, sometimes makes it easier to really grasp and be okay with and accept and understand. And then you can talk about how it is your brain just learns differently, and it's not anyone's fault, and it is not you're dumb or that you're not smart.
They think they are
because they see their friend sitting next to them not struggling the same way they're struggling. So again, you can't advocate for your own needs unless you know that you have those needs and that those needs are okay. It's okay to ask for this help because you're entitled to it. Again, accommodations are not a crutch. They're just leveling the playing field. They're making sure that everything is fair for everyone learning. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to advocate for your needs and ask for your accommodations, you have to know that you're entitled to them and why.
you got to understand it. And I think I can't tell you how many kids you can just see when we explain it, adults too. But when you explain it, it's just like their face changes. It's like a relief.
A relief.
Like, oh, that's right. It's just dyslexia. Like, oh, that's
their whole body relaxes.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's okay. I can deal with that. Mm-hmm. You know? But when they don't have a name for it, then their mind goes everywhere. Right. And so, no, I agree. I think parents, we do get asked that a lot. I think it's so important for kids at all ages. And I think you inform them with words and vocabulary in ways that are appropriate for their age. You're
right.
Not going to go into a whole scientific explanation of dyslexia with a 4-year or with a 6-year old, but you're going to give a more advanced description to a 10th or 11th grader or to an adult. So you want them to have the knowledge. And, you know, there's some really great YouTube videos out there that I think are great. Kids love YouTube.
That's true.
I love YouTube. I love the way it explains things. If you want it explained in a way, that's a great way, a great resource for kids too, to be like, okay. And then maybe even talking about some of the famous people that have dyslexia, because there are a lot of famous people. Didn't Albert Einstein have dyslexia?
Albert Einstein, yeah.
Hello.
They think he had dyslexia.
Genius.
That's right. A lot of success, a lot of famous people, a lot of successful high-end business executives, successful business people, famous people. And that's something for kids, I think, is helpful to show them that they can be successful. Really, anybody.
It doesn't limit them.
It doesn't limit them.
It doesn't limit anybody. And I think that is that's a question we get a lot, like, well, will they be able to go to college? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Right? As long as they know how to advocate for themselves, they know what kinds of accommodations are going to be helpful, and that we get some kind of program in place to help fill in whatever gaps are there that's appropriate for how they learn, then
right. Yeah,
the sky's the limit. There's no stopping
because
them.
Dyslexia, it does not ever go away, does it, Lori?
No, it doesn't. It's there forever, but it can affect you a lot less the more you fill those gaps with the right kind of instruction, the more you understand and learn about it. And I do feel like, you know, we all gravitate towards careers and the things that we're good at. So most of our dyslexic college students, our high school students, aren't going to probably major in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just not something that they're interested in because they've never been good at it. Those are going to be our engineers, and those are going to be our, you know, teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel like you tend to gravitate toward what you're good at, but you can go as far as you want, right?
The sky's the limit.
But it doesn't ever go away. You know, you may struggle less and less with it, especially with technology today, but it's always there. And if you have it, then you know that there's a really, really good chance, probably 50-50, of passing it on to a child. So you then can be more aware of the signs as they develop and get into school aged,
mm-hmm.
And attending school. Then you know the things to look for, and you'll be more aware and on top of it. And I think dyslexic people make some of the very best dyslexia therapists,
mm-hmm.
because they understand the struggle, right?
That's true.
So if you have any other questions about dyslexia, or if there's something that you want to suggest maybe for another episode, please feel free. You can email us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. My name is Lori.
My name's Abby.
Thank you guys for joining us today. And we will look forward to seeing you or hearing from you, or you hearing us, at our next episode. Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.